It is the Palpably Unfair Podcast, episode 16, brought to you by the SB Nation NFL Show. I am your host, Michael Kist, and as always, I am joined by the bright-eyed and bushy-tailed Kyle Posey. Kyle, happy holidays, man. How you doing?
Doing well, man. Happy holidays to you, too. We have a couple more weeks of this bad boy, man. The season's flown by.
Yeah, it absolutely has. And again, gentle listener, we thank you for joining us on this journey here on the podcast, you know, not only today, but throughout the season. And if you are in a giving mood this time of year and you want to give me and Kyle a present, I will take cold hard cash. Or you can head over to the Apple Podcast app, leave a 5-star rating and review. Let them know that Michael Kist and Kyle Posey sent you. We would really appreciate it. And we'll do our best to earn that 5-star rating today as we dig into NFL action from week 15, which includes our top 3 quarterback performances of the week. We'll also talk about a pretty ugly performance from a franchise quarterback. There is, of course, Kyle's 3 defensive MVPs of the week from each level of defense. And we've got a special guest today. He is Jeff Hartman from Behind the Steel Curtain. And he is going to be talking about Kevin Green, who unfortunately passed away at the age of 58 this week. He really fits into our football guys theme here. And I feel like he didn't quite get his due with everything going on with the Steelers right now, which we are going to talk about. So we did spend some time talking about Green specifically and what he brought to the field. But now that the table is set, let's feast on our top 3 quarterback performances of the week 15 action. And Kyle, you know, I put a lot of stock into pressure rates when it comes to breaking up these stacks and ranking these guys. And Justin Herbert was pressured on over 50% of his dropbacks against the Raiders on Thursday Night Football last week in that zany 30-27 win in overtime that they nearly blew in typical Chargers fashion, but they get the job done this time somehow against all odds. I also tend to favor quarterbacks that push the ball down the field, and Herbert was tops in the league for week 15 in intended air yard average. His average throw traveled about 11 yards in the air. It's really unbelievable that the guy, he only threw one pass in the fourth quarter as you're trying to go win a football game. Just another mark against head coach Anthony Lynn, who has been heavily criticized just about everywhere, including on this show. Herbert was balling. He still had over 300 yards despite that while throwing for 2 touchdowns. I really did, though. I like the Chargers catching the Raiders in a quarter-quarter half coverage on the 53-yard toss to Guyton in overtime. It's a great quarters-beating concept, pairing the deep out with the post. The safety has to respect the vertical release from the deep out. That leaves the poor corner on an island with outside leverage trying to run with the post. He's got no shot in that situation. And Herbert is really excellent throwing against leverage, delivered there to set them up for the eventual game winner. They got there. They almost fumbled it away, but they did get there. But still, only one pass in the fourth. Sometimes you just get the feeling that Lynn doesn't know what he has with this dude and that this dude could save his job if he put a little more faith in him. But alas, here we are. And in the Christmas spirit, Kyle, let's pair Herbert with a head coach that could maximize his talents. And first off, I'm going to qualify that Eric Bieniemy is the correct answer to all of these for any quarterback for any team. But we're going to try to mix it up. If you were to pair an eventual head coach with Herbert, who are you looking at if you're the Chargers to maximize Herbert?
So I think just a couple seconds ago when you said Anthony Lynn didn't know, you could have just stopped right there and you would have been good to go. But I'm going Brian Daboll just because what we've seen with Josh Allen this year, he finally has a number one receiver, but he's being asked to play to his strengths. And most quarterbacks, for as weird as that might sound, they're not being asked to do that. I think Lamar Jackson's a prime example. So when you watch Josh Allen, when you watch what he's asked to do, he is able to throw the ball down the field. He also has checkdowns. He also has screen passes to throw. He also has the easy layup throws, slants and whatnot. So to see Justin Herbert be able to do that would be just night and day from what he's being asked to do today this year, because it just seems like he's having to kind of bail out the Chargers time and time again. His talent is obvious. His talent is almost palpable just because his catches, his passes catch you, man. He's unreal when it comes to his arm strength. So I feel like once we have a better idea of what he can just do as a quarterback, and people already know he's really, really good, but I think just having a guy like Daboll would just be take his career to just another level.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And there are a lot of different elements to that as to why I like that. I told you before the show, like, Dable's my guy. And you're like, Dable's my guy. So I let you have it here. But I do want to kind of like just like make the case for it. Like right now, Josh Allen is top five in play action frequency, right? So give me all of the downfield play action shots with Justin Herbert. Really let him shine in that area. Make life easy on him. I also think that Dable did a fantastic job, not only last year too, getting the most out of Allen as a quick game passer, but this year as well. They like to spread it out. They like to go five wide. They make the reads real simple for him. He picks a side. He throws it there. So they would really be able to get the most out of Herbert in that way too. So I really think what he's done with Allen there has been nothing short of spectacular. We're going to talk about him a little bit more in a second, but let's get to my number two quarterback performance of week 15. Baker Mayfield, man, against the Giants, who have seen some improved play from their defense lately. Baker was just lights out, like damn near perfect. 27 of 32, 297 yards, two touchdowns, zero interceptions. The two highest differences in yards per attempt when using play action versus non-play action this year, it's Ryan Tannehill and Baker Mayfield. Baker's yards per attempt is over 3 yards higher when they utilize a run fake. Ryan Tannehill currently leads all ingrained starters with the highest play action rate. Baker is fifth, so like really, really high. Kevin Stefanski, as our friend Seth Galina over at PFF pointed out this week, has made this offense pretty idiot-proof. And I'm not calling Baker an idiot, but that's just kind of what he's doing. They don't ask him to be a straight-up drop-back passer on first down. In fact, he's only got straight dropbacks about 20 times a game. That's super low. When he is doing that, he's throwing a bunch of go routes because defenses are rolling a safety down into the box and it gives them one-on-one on the outside. So there's not a lot of thinking going into that. And with their play action designs, there's not a whole lot of thinking overall that has to take place in this offense for Baker, which is great. And that's me not trying to, I'm not trying to knock Baker necessarily because bless him, he is getting the job done and he is executing what he is asked to execute. But it is very much so a compliment of Kevin Stefanski and the offense that he's designed that is also missing Odell Beckham Jr., by the way. He is maximizing every ounce of Baker's talent and Baker is delivering on that talent. Kyle, we have seen average quarterbacks like Jared Goff and, excuse me, Jimmy Garoppolo thrive in very similar systems and go to a Super Bowl. Are we sleeping on the Browns' ability to go blow for blow with a team like the Chiefs with that ready-made offense featuring a quarterback playing at a high level in an offense that makes things simple for him?
Yeah, it's going to be tough because we have seen the Browns play well. We have seen the Browns execute. We have seen Stefanski. Honestly, like calling this offense idiot-proof is the best description I could imagine because it looks so easy. It looks like a Shanahan-type offense, a McVay-type offense where guys are just running free at the second level. These throwing windows are so wide open. It's tough for me to commit to that just because we know what we've seen. We know what we've seen from Mayfield when he's under pressure. We know how he looks against the Ravens, how he looks against the Steelers, how he looks against the better upper echelon type of defenses. So knowing that he's going to probably force the ball a little bit, knowing that he has to keep up with Mahomes, I just don't see him playing that sort of clean type of game that we saw. And even in just this last primetime game, he still made a mistake. So those mistakes aren't going anywhere.
I do think, though, they're a really interesting matchup for the Chiefs. The Chiefs, obviously, their strength is not their defense. And if the Browns can just score enough to stay in it, not go down two scores, not have to eliminate that play action facet of their game, I think they're built really well. That offensive line is certainly built well, and that's a big reason why they can do what they do is because they have a mauling offensive line that are great in pass protection. They keep Baker clean. So yeah, we could say, you know, Baker sucks under pressure all day, right? They kind of pointed that out on the broadcast. Chris Collinsworth did, but at the same time, if you can't get to him, does not matter. So I'm actually really looking forward to what the playoffs show with the Browns and how they're able to continue to exercise the demons of past head coaches and failures there. Let's get to our number three quarterback performance of week 15 action. Look, I didn't even know that Saturday football had started when it did, but as soon as I tuned in, I saw Josh Allen just absolutely frying the Denver Broncos with some ridiculous throws. Allen threw for 359 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. He had the second highest intended air yard average on the week. Remember, I weigh that heavily. He's a cyborg. He's insane. He's made this list a bunch of times this year, and I did the whole apology tour, so I'm not going to stick on this one for too long, but I will say that I went through a review process with the Yeet of the Week, which usually drops on Monday Football Monday, is awarded then. And I decided that there are two throws that he had that are going to take away the award here. The first one is the 55-yard bomb along the right sideline to Stephon Diggs, who really didn't have to do anything but just like slightly put his hands out while he was in stride. It just dropped right in the laundry chute there. Also, the one he tossed after being tripped and still somehow getting it to Stephon Diggs to convert on third and two is just amazing stuff. Guy has crazy arm strength, can throw it from any platform. This total outlier of a third-year breakout continues to confound me, but I'm just going to stop asking questions about it because the guy obviously put in the work to be great, and the Bills, as we have mentioned, have done a tremendous, tremendous job developing him. And by the way, Josh Allen doesn't turn 25 until May. So let's do a little exercise here. I'm going to put you on the spot, Kyle. Justin Herbert is 22. Lamar Jackson is 23. Kyler Murray is 23. And then Josh Allen is 24 years old. Keeping it with those four under 25 quarterbacks. If you are starting a franchise, can you order those four quarterbacks for me and piss everyone off possible while you do it?
Yeah, there's no doubt that I imagine my answer is not going to align with a lot of people's answer. But with that said, I imagine this questioning is, I have the same supporting cast. I have the same play caller for all of these guys. And
yeah,
I'm probably in a weird way. Because Herbert and Kyler to me are really, really good, but they also have a lot to work on. That's not a slight at all because they're really young and they've flashed the superstar ability, but I just want to see more consistency from them. So I would put them in a separate tier below the other two. I'm going to go Lamar second and I'm going to go Josh Allen first because I know what Josh Allen can do this year. Seeing him with a wide receiver one, seeing him with a fantastic play caller, there's still a bit of a roller coaster, sure, but man, he is an MVP type of player. And he can bail you out. And Lamar is amazing. We saw it MVP last year. I just want to see more consistency from him. I see him miss the same throws that we give Josh Allen, you know, flack for. So I'm not sure why that's the case. If I'm just going based off of, and obviously I'm probably not giving Lamar enough credit for what he did in 2019 and probably for what he did in 2020. But just based off for everything that we've seen from Josh Allen this year, being in command, I have to put him first. I'll probably say Allen, Lamar, and then I'll go Kyler Herbert as like a coin flip.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's basically the same way that I had it. I'm surprised there. I was hoping we disagreed a little bit more because I have Josh Allen at number one, and I agree with you as far as like Lamar goes. We're probably not giving him enough credit. We have talked about the lack of weapons there. Teams kind of figuring out the offense there, how to play defense against them, as we talked about with Mike Renner on one of these shows previously in the year. So I'm going to go Allen number one. Then I'm going to go Lamar because I still think he's super, super special. But you're right. There is some consistency issues there. Throwing against man coverage accurately has been an issue for him this year as defenses play more man coverage against him. And then I would go three Herbert and then four Murray. I think it's because I think Herbert is playing just as well, if not better than Murray this year. This is Murray's second year. I think Murray is just kind of like an average quarterback, but that does have top 10 type of potential. He's obviously very exciting, but some accuracy issues, some decision-making issues and whatnot kind of hold him back in that regard. So, okay, now we went through some really good quarterbacks and we're about to bring up a real stinker because Pittsburgh Steelers, come on down. You are the next contestant on Do You Have a Quarterback? And man, Kyle, a lot of people in the media thought that the Steelers 11-0 record was a mirage. We talked about it with Jeff Hartman of Behind the Steel Curtain a couple weeks ago regarding the concern with how the offense had been declining recently, why that was. And we will talk with Jeff here in a little bit about the unfortunate passing of Kevin Green again. But keeping it with Big Ben here for a moment, the guy just looks beat up and done. And I tweeted this out during the game, quote, "Big Ben moves and throws like I imagine Frosty the Snowman would if he wasn't murdered by the sun," end quote. And this is, it's not an out of nowhere thing. He is consistently in the lower portion of the weekly average air yard rankings. They've been running a quick game offense all year to mask his limitations. The ball's been coming out super quick. He's had one of the worst deep balls in the league from a guy not named Drew Lock or Joe Burrow. Defenses are starting to creep up on him and force him to throw 10 plus yards. He simply cannot do it. And you saw it in the Bengals game with a great example being that shallow crosser from Juju being cut by the safety Von Bell, which resulted in a big smack. And shout out to Bell, by the way. I have zero issue with Juju dancing on logos before the game, right? Young man, do your thing. Go have fun. Love it. But I love that Bell said, well, man, if that's what he's going to do, you got to hit the guy. You got to let him know. And he delivered on that promise. That's just good football. That's good entertainment right there. But I digress. Kyle, the Steelers are now on a 3-game losing streak with L's to the football team, the Bills, and now the Bengals. They haven't scored 20 or more points since November 22nd against the Jaguars. This team is in deep trouble. But like, how do you save it for them? Is it Mason Rudolph? Because Kyle, Colts, Browns, next. Are they screwed? Because it feels like they're screwed, and there's a serious chance they could still actually lose the AFC North to the Browns in the last week of the season.
That would be amazing just based on the way the season started, but that wouldn't be a surprise, I feel like. So the last throw of the game where Big Ben had overthrew a 10-yard in route when he tried to put all, like, it took him everything he had to throw that pass, and he still sailed it by like 10 yards. I feel like that tells you all you need to know when we're talking about accuracy and arm strength, because it's just not there for Ben. And when that's the case, defenses are, man, you saw what the Bengals did. They were aggressive. Yep. They were playing fast. They knew that they can make plays. That's because they knew that Big Ben wasn't going to challenge them. He is not a threat by any stretch of the imagination right now. And I think, man, no team really does this, but I'd be positioning to try to play the Steelers if I was a playoff team, because their offense just can't do anything, and that's because Big Ben.
And they have a talented group of wide receivers that can still make plays. Like, sure, you know, if Chase Claypool makes a play on a one-hander, maybe the game looks a little bit different. Deontay Johnson is speedy and quick. James Washington came up with a big play for him. But at the same time, man, like I was telling you before the show, like if I had to do a power ranking right now, I don't know if the Steelers would be in the top 15. Like if you take away that 11-0 start, because they're a different team than what they were, and they've been trending this way. What they look like right now and how you can project them moving forward, I don't know how you can see this team as a serious playoff contender. So I think the team that gets them in the playoffs, to Kyle, your point, really is lucking up. Kyle, let's get out of here. And when we come back on the other side with the Palpably Unfair podcast, we're going to talk about your three defensive MVPs of the week, one from each level of the defense. And then we're going to get to our interview with Jeff Hartman talking about a real football guy. Kevin Green. That's coming up next here on the Palpably Unfair podcast. And we are back here on the Palpably Unfair podcast, episode 16, the SB Nation NFL show, bringing it to you. Michael Kist here with Kyle Posey. So we talked about our top three quarterback performances of week 15 action. We talked about a serious dud that is concerning for a playoff team. Let's get into Kyle's three defensive MVPs from week 15, we take one from each level of defense. And as always, we are going to start in the trenches because that's where games are won and lost, or at least so I'm told. Kyle, we usually avoid putting this guy on the list because every week you feel like you could put him on there because he's so dominant. Who is it, and what about his game stood out this week?
Yeah, we've gone out of the way to not put Aaron Donald on this list because Aaron Donald looks like Aaron Donald every week. And in this situation, yeah, Aaron Donald faced the Jets, and you can only imagine how that went. He was honestly in the backfield. It felt like on every drive, on every series, he made a play. He beat his man. He was chasing Sam Darnold around. I believe he finished with a total of 10 pressures on the day, which is very good for most players, but it's just another day at the office for Aaron Donald. So I don't feel like we need to waste too much time on Aaron Donald being Aaron Donald, but at the same time, he's such a superstar that we're so normalized to him being a superstar. And that's not fair to Aaron Donald. So we need to at least talk about him, his greatness.
Yeah. And I can't believe that during the offseason, one of the big arguments on Twitter between analytics and film people was that Aaron Donald's an average run defender and whatnot. Like, come on, man. Like, let's not get crazy and with our own analytics and let it muddy what we're seeing, because that's just an absolute joke. All right. Let's get into the second level. This is a guy from the Bucks, and they've had a couple of guys on here rotating back and forth. Which one did you like this week?
Almost going back to that, I almost left off Aaron Donald because defensive tackle wins and the Rams lost, since we're talking analytics. I'm going Devin White didn't make the Pro Bowl, and he didn't make it over 49ers linebacker Fred Warner. And instantly, Bucs Twitter was not happy. They threw out all types of volume stats you could imagine. And you guessed it, linebacker wins as well.
Yes, it was
that. And that was a reason that they thought Devin White should make the Pro Bowl. So White is on his way to stardom, and I feel pretty strongly about that. He deserves all the love in the world. And I imagine a lot of the recency bias was based on how he played Sunday. So in the first quarter, White had a series where he broke up a pass, he jumped an out route, and on the very next play, he tracks the center, or he beats the center, makes him almost fall, which is pretty hilarious, tracks the running back down for a loss of 4, and on the very next play, he tracks down an out route by running back, makes his tackle for a minimal gain, and then he just waves off the Falcons like, I'm done with you guys, I'm tired of you guys. Like, when I saw that, I was like, oh, he's the linebacker of the week, but it was all game. Like, he played like a man possessed. It was really fun to watch Devin White play. There was another play to begin the second quarter where he just did a good job of recognizing the running back wasn't running a route. So he hopped into the throwing lane, broke up a pass against Matt Ryan. Those are the plays that I imagine White would like to make more of, just the consistent mental plays where he's not just flashing his out of this world athleticism. He had success rushing the passer, but he's never had success like he did on Sunday. Like, earlier in the season, he had a sack where it came off a coffee house stunt. So he's essentially just fooling the offensive line. That was a lot of trick. There was a lot of trickeration from White again against the Falcons. It was pretty impressive. So his first sack, Gurley was at running back. So Gurley checks to see if White is blitzing. White was not blitzing, so Gurley went to chip the edge rusher and then go out for a route. And as soon as Gurley went for the chip, White hit the turbo button, raced in the backfield, sacked Matt Ryan. On the second sack, it was a lot of the same, where he was kind of playing cat and mouse with a running back, and he got into the backfield, and he sacked Matt Ryan. And on the third sack, he was just in the right place at the right time. But on the day, White finished with 8 stops, 2 pass breakups, and he should just get credit for some of that heady play, because you really don't see linebackers play on that type of level. So it was good to see White play.
You know, you mentioned Pro Bowl and snubs and whatnot, and I never get upset about Pro Bowl snubs. I just don't. Like, if an Eagles guy is left off, whatever, I don't care. I think 1 year I was upset that, like, Jason Kelce wasn't on there, but, like, he was also playing like the best center in the league. And, you know, maybe you write an article about it for some clicks and whatnot, but, like, I think this year I'm upset that Andrus Peat from the Saints is in. Like, he is the worst lineman on that team. I think Saints fans know that. Yes. And they're actually, like, really upset with Peat. And I don't get how they're also voting for him for the Pro Bowl. And then you look at the other conference and, like, Wyatt Teller doesn't get in when he's playing, like, the best guard in the NFL. Maybe because he doesn't have the name recognition. I know he missed a few games. But, like, man, for Peat to get in and Teller not to get in, it was a big L for football guys. I'll put it to you that way. So, all right, let's get to the third level of the defense. This dude had a super productive day coming out of the NFC West. Who you got?
Yeah, DJ Reed from the Seahawks was great, and he played like a football guy. He played like a man possessed. He played like a guy that was playing for his job. Honestly, Reed's performance was the best effort that I've seen from a cornerback from wire to wire all season. And it was really impressive. So he's doing most of this against Terry McLaurin, who is probably one of the 10 best wide receivers in the NFL. And I feel like not a lot of people know that. So that's why we should qualify that. So Reed's stat line looks great. He allowed 4 receptions on 10 targets for a measly 15 yards. One of those catches actually was 10 yards. So he shut Washington's pass game down. He had 2 pass breakups, and he had an interception where he read Dwayne Strip Club's eyes. If you watch where Reed came from on a few of those tackles, you'd be blown away. So he's running from, like, the bottom of the numbers to inside the hash, where I mentioned you would have thought it was a playoff game or a Super Bowl, because you just really don't see cornerbacks try that hard, as you know, bad as that sounds. They just don't have that kind of effort. So it was nice. And I just like how Reed made plays, just both in man coverage and against zone. Against McLaurin, he was a pain. And that's probably the best compliment you can give a cornerback. He was just a nuisance. He would annoy him all game. And Reed did all the coaching points that you want to see, you know, play to their hands, take their hands away, get to their hands. So he was great, man. And I really haven't seen a guy play that hard and just be that big of a nuisance for an entire game. So Reed is hands down the best DB of the week for me.
So he had a football guy week, and we got a football guy career, essentially. So let's get to our interview, as I've been teasing all show here. Let's get to the interview with Jeff Hartman, Behind the steel curtain, we are going to talk about the unfortunate passing of Kevin Green and remember him by talking about how great he was on the freaking football field, man. Let's get to that right now. Jeff, thank you for joining us here on the SB Nation NFL show. I do wish it was for a different reason, because we unfortunately found out earlier this week that Hall of Fame pass rusher Kevin Green passed away at the age of 58. Green spent most of his time with the Rams, but I most fondly remember his time with the Steelers and Blitzburg in the 90s. In fact, you could say the same was true of Green, as he decided to get his Hall of Fame ring from the Steelers despite only playing there three of his 15 years as a pro. Jeff, how'd the Steelers community take this news?
It was weird. I felt really bad for the Green family and for the news itself, because it happened just hours before the Steelers played the Bengals on Monday Night Football. And so it hit hard. And for those fans that were alive to remember Green when he played in Pittsburgh, that, you know, mainly that 94 season where he had 14 sacks that year. I mean, he was a monster on that team. In that quiver and quake defense with Greg Lloyd and Kevin Green, I mean, they were so much fun to watch, and that was my childhood. The loss to this, obviously on Monday Night Football, has kind of diminished it. But you know, I'm writing an article that's going to run on Wednesday for the website BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. That's kind of like my ode to Kevin Green. He was a big part of my childhood. I still remember playing backyard football and, you know, the 10 Mississippi rush. And if you got to that, quarterback, you got up and you did the Kevin Green fist pump like he used to always do and get the fans all jacked up. I loved Kevin Green. He was more than a player. He was almost superhuman. He had the blonde hair flowing out of the helmet, always getting jacked up. He was a super polite guy, came from a military family. It was great. People don't realize he only played in Pittsburgh for 3 years. Yeah. Everyone thinks he was like this lifelong Steeler. No, he was like a journeyman, basically. Just had a short stop in Pittsburgh and just played. Boy, he played great when he was there.
Yeah, it's wild, because it's like, as far as Kevin Green, the player, like, how do you remember him on field? Because I know I have the same vision as you do, right? The long blonde locks flowing as he comes screaming off the edge like an animal. But, like, what can you say about the guy's on-field performance that made him so loved and led to him being third in all-time sacks in the NFL, which is wild.
Yeah. He was relentless. Like, that's one word to really describe Kevin Green. Like, when he rushed the passer, he never quit. And if you watch some highlight films of him, it wasn't always just that Lawrence Taylor pure pass rushing, get around the edge, the bend, the crazy bend, and then you sack the quarterback. His was, he's going to battle the tackle. He's going to push him back into the quarterback, get his arm on him, take him down. He was relentless, and he was such a hard worker. You could definitely see that in his game. And when I think about Kevin Green on the field, he was a different breed. You know, you think about defenses now, pass rushers are asked to do so much. His job was to just rush the quarterback. And you look at his stats compared to like the quiver and quake, Greg Lloyd. Like, Greg Lloyd was more of an all-around player. He would drop back into coverage. He was more of a sideline to sideline athlete. Kevin Green was a one-trick pony, so to speak, as Mike Tomlin would say. He was to get after the quarterback and make the plays by sacking the quarterback, and he did it.
Yeah,
160 sacks speaks for itself, right?
Yeah, I definitely agree, man. And when I was growing up, you know, my best friend was a Steelers fan, so I got a ton of exposure to the Steelers defense and watching them, and it was a blast. And talking about him as a pass rusher, he said, quote, "I figured out how to pass rush. I figured out how to put a guy, an offensive tackle, 3 or 4 inches taller, 80 pounds heavier, put him in a position of failure. I did that," end quote. And he did time and time and time again. He was a 2-time All-Pro, 5-time Pro Bowl selection, just had a fantastic career. Jeff, this might be an oddball question. Was there any hard feelings in Pittsburgh over Green being the Packers linebacker coach the year that the Packers beat the Steelers in the Super Bowl? Or was it like two old friends meeting up at like a high school reunion?
It hurt. Let's just put it that way. It hurt because Kevin Green was so close. I mean, 1994, he had that tremendous year. They make it to the AFC Championship game. They lose to Stan Humphries in the San Diego Chargers at Three River Stadium. I still have nightmares about that game as a young adolescent boy. 1995, they get to Super Bowl 30. If it weren't for Neil O'Donnell crapping the bed on more than one occasion, they beat the Cowboys. And so Kevin Green left after that. And there's these stories of him staying on the field after Super Bowl 30. And he just said, he knew it was done in Pittsburgh. Yeah. He knew he was going to be going elsewhere, and he wanted to take it in. And for him to get the ring in Green Bay, against the Steelers was just kind of like a dagger into the heart of Steeler Nation. And then you watch the video that was kind of circulating on social media where he's talking to Clay Matthews right before he caused the fumble on Rashard Mendenhall in the third quarter. And that was the turning point of that game. And I'm like, oh, Kevin, do you have to say that now? Come on. Like, come on, man. Like, that was the turning point of the game. Like, I felt great. Good for him because he's a great guy. Everyone loves Kevin Green. You don't hear anyone tell a bad story about Kevin Green among Steeler fans. You just won't. You've heard other players, like, they're jerks in public. That was never the case with Kevin Green. But no, I don't think there was that much hard. That wasn't hard feelings. I mean, he had an opportunity and he won a ring. So good for him.
My buddy will still tell you that Neil O'Donnell and Rashard Mendenhall were on the take. He's still that upset about it.
I believe Neil O'Donnell. Jerry Jones paid him off. There's no way you do that twice in a game.
Incredible. Incredible. So, Jeff, thank you for stopping by, man. Let the listeners know where they can find you, all your work, where to look for that Kevin Green piece that'll be coming out today, all that good stuff.
Yeah, that'll be out around 12:30 at behindthesteelcurtain.com. Check it out. A letter from the editor. You can check me out on Twitter at @jhartman_PIT. And as always, make sure you check us out on our podcast platform. Wherever you get your podcast, search Steelers or Behind the Steel Curtain. Subscribe and follow. We appreciate it.
And we're back here on the Palpably Unfair podcast. Thank you for Jeff Hartman for stepping by. Make sure that you check out Behind the Steel Curtain. They're doing great stuff over there on their podcast network. And I really appreciate Jeff's time as always. Kyle, I got one more football guy for you, because this is a guy that I've really liked throughout the years. And we'll go with a defensive back here. I'm going to go with Packers safety Adrian Amos. And the guy's just been like solid for freaking years, man. So I actually wanted to bring up a conversation that was had on Twitter between my co-host on the Kiss and Select show over at Bleeding Green Nation and Greg Gabriel, who is a former scout for the Chicago Bears and known Twitter belligerent antagonist, whatnot. It was this conversation on Twitter happened on March 23rd, 2019. And I guess Solak and Gabriel were going back and forth between the value of HaHa Clinton Dix and Adrian Amos. And I got to tell you, I think Gabriel was being a big old homer on this one and a little bit hurt that Amos was leaving for greener pastures. He says, at Benjamin Solak, write this down. Amos getting $9 million a year will go down as one of the big mistakes in free agency this year. The right money was 3.5, which the Bears gave to HaHa. Benjamin Solak then responded by sending him a picture of him actually writing down exactly what Greg told him to write, which was a funny bit. But you look at the way that take has aged. I don't even know where HaHa is right now, because he was cut in camp because what was it? It was Dallas, and Dallas thought that former Giant Darian Thompson had outplayed him in camp to the point where they could just get rid of him. So HaHa has bounced around the league, while Adrian Amos has continued to stay steady. And I find it was funny. The first week of that season in 2019 was Adrian Amos picking off Mitch Trubisky to end that game for the Packers against the Bears. So just a trip down memory lane for my old co-host there at Bleeding Green Nation. But Kyle, any thoughts on that or any last words for the gentle listeners as we start to kick it towards Christmas?
Just because they're on Twitter and have a blue check mark instead they work in the NFL does not mean that they know what they are talking about. HaHa Clinton Dix is not on an NFL team. Adrian Amos is and has been one of the better safeties in the NFL. This is not that difficult.
Amos was clearly the better player and remain so. All right. So a little bit of light dragging here. Kyle had brought up the idea of like, we should talk about the worst Twitter accounts and follows and so on and so forth. And Kyle is always trying to get me into trouble. And I feel like that's the only reason he does this. So we're going to skip past that. We're going to get the heck on out of here and we're going to get to our holidays. We're going to continue here at the SB Nation NFL show with our regularly scheduled programming. You're going to get the look ahead on Thursday. And then I have entered the fray of football cheat sheet for the Friday show. So you're going to hear that with me, Gina Kelly, and Kate Majuk, who is a great addition to that show as well. So keep it here with the SB Nation NFL show as we get through the week and provide you with some holiday content. We thank you for joining us. And remember, go dominate and have yourselves a day.